Vanity Fair, a novel without a hero, by William Makepeace Thackeray.
While our century was in its teens, and on one sunshiny morning in June, there drove up to the great iron gate of Miss Pinkerton's Academy for Young Ladies on Chiswick Mall a large family coach with two fat horses and driven by a fat coachman in a three-cornered hat and wig.
"It's Mrs. Sedley's coach, sister," said Miss Jemima Pinkerton.
"Have you completed all the necessary preparations incident to Miss Sedley's departure, Miss Jemima?"
asked Miss Pinkerton herself. That majestic lady, the Semiramis of Hammersmith, the friend of Dr. Johnson.
"The girls were up at 4 this morning packing her trunk, sister."
"And I trust, Miss Jemima, you have made a copy of Miss Sedley's account."
"This is it, is it? Very good. £93.04. Be kind enough to address it to Mr. John Sedley, Esquire, Russell Square, and to seal this billet which I have written to his lady."
Miss Pinkerton's billet was to the following effect:
"Madam, after her 6 years' residence at the Mall, I have the honour and happiness of presenting Miss Amelia Sedley to her parents as a young lady not unworthy to occupy a fitting position in their polished and refined circle. Those virtues which characterise the young English gentlewoman, those accomplishments which become her birth and station, will not be found wanting in Miss Sedley, whose industry and obedience has endeared her to her instructors, and whose delightful sweetness of temper has charmed her aged and her youthful companions. In leaving the Mall, Miss Amelia carries with her the hearts of her companions and the affectionate regard of her mistress, who has the honour to subscribe herself, Madam, your most obliged, humble servant, Barbara Pinkerton. A P.S. Miss Sharp accompanies Miss Sedley. It is particularly requested that Miss Sharp's stay in Russell Square may not exceed 10 days. The family of distinction with whom she is engaged as a governess desire to avail themselves of her services as soon as possible."
This letter completed, Miss Pinkerton proceeded to write her own name and that of Miss Sedley in the flyleaf of a Johnson's dictionary, the interesting work which she invariably presented to her scholars on their departure from the Mall. Being commanded by her elder sister to get the dictionary from the cupboard, Miss Jemima had extracted 2 copies of the book. When Miss Pinkerton had finished her inscription in the first, Miss Jemima, with a rather timid and dubious air, handed her the second.
"For whom is this, Miss Jemima?" said Miss Pinkerton with awful coldness.
"For Becky Sharp," answered Jemima, trembling very much. "She's going too."
"Miss Jemima," exclaimed her sister, "are you in your senses? Replace the dictionary in the closet and never venture to take such a liberty in future. Now, send Miss Sedley instantly to me."
And so, venturing to say not another word, poor Jemima trotted off, exceedingly flurried and nervous. Miss Sedley's papa was a merchant in London and a man of some wealth, whereas Miss Sharp was an articled pupil, an orphan, for whom Miss Pinkerton had done, as she thought, quite enough without conferring upon her parting the high honour of the dictionary. As we are to see a great deal of Amelia, there is no harm in saying, at the outset of our acquaintance, that she was a dear little creature. As she is not a heroine, there is no need to describe her person. Indeed, I am afraid that her nose was rather short than otherwise, and her cheeks a great deal too round and red for a heroine. But her face blushed with rosy health, and her lips with the freshest of smiles, and she had a pair of eyes that sparkled with the brightest and honestest good humour, except, indeed, when they filled with tears. And that was a great deal too often. Well, then, the presents and the trunks and bonnet boxes of Miss Sedley having been arranged in the carriage, together with a very small and weather-beaten old cow-skin trunk with Miss Sharp's card neatly nailed upon it, the hour for parting came. Miss Pinkerton addressed her pupil. A seed cake and a bottle of wine were produced in the drawing-room, as on the solemn occasions of the visits of parents, and these refreshments being partaken of, Miss Sedley was at liberty to depart.
"You'll go in and say goodbye to Miss Pinkerton, Becky," said Miss Jemima to a young lady, of whom nobody took any notice, and who was coming downstairs with her own handbox.
"I suppose I must," said Miss Sharp calmly, and advanced in a very unconcerned manner, and said in French to Miss Pinkerton with a perfect accent,
"Mademoiselle, je vais vous faire mes adieux."
Miss Pinkerton did not understand French. She only directed those who did. But biting her lips and throwing back her venerable and Roman-nosed head, on the top of which figured a large and solemn turban, she said,
"Miss Sharp, I wish you a good morning."
Miss Sharp only folded her hands with a rigid smile and bow, and quite declined to accept the proffered hand, on which Semiramis tossed up her turban more indignantly than ever. Then came the struggle and parting in the hall. Words refused to tell it. All the servants were there, all the dear friends, all the young ladies, and there was such a scuffling and hugging and kissing and crying as no pen can depict. The embracing was over. They parted. That is, Miss Sedley parted from her friends. Miss Sharp had demurely entered the carriage some minutes before. Nobody cried for leaving her. The coachman slammed the carriage door shut on his young, weeping mistress and pulled away.
"Stop!"
cried Miss Jemima, rushing to the gate with a parcel.
"It's some sandwiches, my dear," she said to Amelia. "You may be hungry, you know. And, Becky, here's a book for you that my sister, that is, I... Johnson's Dictionary, you know. You mustn't leave us without that. Goodbye. Drive on, coachman. God bless you."
And the kind creature returned to the garden, overcome with emotion. But lo, and just as the coach drove off, Miss Sharp put her pale face out of the window and actually flung the book back into the garden. This almost caused Jemima to faint with terror.
"Well, I never," said she. "What an audacious..."
Emotion prevented her from completing either sentence, and the carriage rolled away.
"How could you do so, Rebecca?"
said Amelia to her travelling companion after a pause.
"Why, do you think Miss Pinkerton will come out and order me back?"
said Rebecca, laughing.
"No, but I hate the whole house," continued Miss Sharp in a fury. "I hope I may never set eyes on it again. I wish it were at the bottom of the Thames, I do. And if Miss Pinkerton were there, I wouldn't pick her out. That I wouldn't." "Oh, Rebecca, Rebecca, for shame, how can you? How dare you have such wicked, revengeful thoughts?" "Revenge may be wicked, but it's natural," answered Miss Rebecca. "I'm no angel."
And to say the truth, she certainly was not. Thus the world began for these two young ladies. Once the carriage arrived at Russell Square, Amelia showed Rebecca over every room of the house, and everything in every one of her drawers, and her books, and her piano, and her dresses, and all her necklaces, brooches, laces, and gimcracks. When Rebecca saw the two magnificent cashmere shawls, which Joseph Sedley had brought home to his sister, she said, with perfect truth, that it must be delightful to have a brother, and easily got the pity of the tender-hearted Amelia for being alone in the world and an orphan without friends or kindred.
"Oh, how you must love him," Rebecca added.
Amelia laughed.
"Joseph doesn't seem to care much whether I love him or not. He gave me two fingers to shake when he arrived after 10 years' absence. He was very kind to me as a child," she added. "I was but 5 years old when he went away."
"Isn't he very rich?" said Rebecca. "They say all the Indian nabobs are enormously rich."
"I believe he has a very large income. And is your sister-in-law a nice, pretty woman?" "La! Joseph is not married," said Amelia, laughing again.
The meaning of the above series of questions, as translated in the heart of the ingenious Miss Sharp, was simply this. If Mr. Joseph Sedley is rich and unmarried, why should I not marry him? I have only a fortnight, to be sure, but there's no harm in trying. And she determined within herself to make this laudable attempt. A very stout, puffy man, in buckskins and Hessian boots, with several immense neckcloths that rose almost to his nose, was reading a paper by the fire when the two girls entered, and bounced off his armchair, and blushed excessively, and hid his face almost in his neckcloths at this apparition.
"It's only your sister, Joseph,"
said Amelia, laughing and shaking the two fingers which he held out.
This is my friend, Miss Sharp, whom you've heard me mention.
No, never, upon my word, said the head under the neckcloth, shaking very much. That is, yes. What abominably cold weather, Miss...
And herewith he fell to poking the fire with all his might, although it was in the middle of June.
He is very handsome,
whispered Rebecca to Amelia, rather loud.
Do you think so? Said the latter. I'll tell him. Darling, not for worlds, said Miss Sharp, starting back, timid as a fawn.
At this minute the father of the family walked in.
Come, Joseph, be friends with Miss Sharp, and let us all go to dinner.
There's pilau, Joseph, just as you like it, and Papa has brought home the best turbot in Billingsgate, said his mother.
Come, come, sir. Walk downstairs with Miss Sharp, and I will follow with these two young women, said the father, and took an arm of wife and daughter and walked merrily off.
Joseph Sedley was 12 years older than his sister Amelia. He was in the East India Company's civil service, and his name appeared in the Bengal division of the East India Register as collector of Bogley Waller, an honourable and lucrative post. Luckily, at this time of which we speak, he caught a liver complaint, for the cure of which he returned to Europe, and which was the source of great comfort and amusement to him in his native country. He did not live with his parents in London, but at lodgings of his own, like a gay young bachelor. Downstairs then they went, Joseph very red and blushing, Rebecca very modest, and holding her green eyes downwards. She was dressed in white, with bare shoulders as white as snow, the picture of youth, unprotected innocence, and humble, virgin simplicity.
I must be very quiet, thought she, and very much interested about India.
Now we have heard how Mrs. Sedley had prepared a fine curry for her son, just as he liked it, and in the course of dinner a portion of this dish was offered to Rebecca.
What is it? Said she, turning with an appealing look to Mr. Joseph.
Capital, said he. His mouth was full of it, his face quite red with the delightful exercise of gobbling. Mother, it is as good as my own curries in India.
Oh, I must try some, if it is an Indian dish, said Miss Rebecca. I am sure everything must be good that comes from there.
Give Miss Sharp some curry, my dear, said Mr. Sedley, laughing.
Rebecca had never tasted the dish before.
Do you find it as good as everything else from India? Said Mr. Sedley.
Oh, excellent, said Rebecca, who was suffering tortures from the cayenne pepper.
Try a chili with it, Miss Sharp, said Mr. Joseph, really interested.
A chili? Said Rebecca, gasping. Oh, yes.
She thought a chili was something cool, as its name imported, and put one into her mouth. It was hotter than the curry. Flesh and blood could bear it no longer.
Water! For heaven's sake, water!
Mr. Sedley burst out laughing. The paternal laugh was echoed by Joseph, who thought the joke capital. The ladies only smiled a little.
You won't like everything from India now, Miss Sharp, said the old gentleman.
But when the ladies had retired after dinner, the wily old fellow said to his son,
Have a care, Joss. That girl is setting her cap at you.
Pooh!
Nonsense, said Joss, highly flattered.